51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Nice to be back in the seat, and thanks to Kay for looking after things for the past couple of nights. Tonight in our film reviews, The Dinosaurs Return. Not just talking about Jeff Goldblum and Sam Neill, the latest Jurassic film is on the slate this evening. Legendary German actor Udo Kier returns in a remarkable performance in Swan Song, where he's an elderly hairdresser who reconnects with his past en route to one last hairdo. And we'll be discussing Earwig, set in a post-war European city where a man looks at a 10-year-old girl and her unusual dentures, which are made of ice. Dentophobes, your card is marked. Joining me this evening, Donald Clark and Cara O'Doherty. Let's start with Jurassic World Dominion. Cast members from the original 1993 Spielberg film, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum and Sam Neill, join forces with Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. Legacy characters, Donald. I'm not sure how you feel about that phrase. It certainly worked for Top Gun Maverick. Jeff Goldblum, Sam Neill, Laura Dern. Are they legacy actors giving us legacy characters here?
I have no idea what that phrase means. But, I mean, you're right. I have come across it. It's driven me bananas. I mean, there are all these various phrases in nerdology that have now crept into critical thinking, which I have absolutely no time. By legacy characters, they mean people who are in the first film. I mean, you know, it's longer, but it's actually, I would say, clearer what we're talking about. Yeah, I mean, good grief. I mean, you mentioned Top Gun Maverick there. And I mean, I think it's reasonable for some people to say over the last few weeks that maybe the critical community, if I may be so pompous, got a little bit overheated about the Top Gun Maverick. But you look at this thing and you can see where that praise, possibly overpraise, sprang from. It's just terrible. the Top Gun Maverick was really no more lofty in its ambitions than this. I mean, it wasn't trying to do anything significantly more sophisticated. But it was, just like this film, trying to connect with as many demographics as possible. Right. And as you suggest, with the reference to legacy characters, also remind people of their youth and remind people of what they felt when they first saw the film. But whereas Top Gun was a beautifully engineered machine, this is just like this bunch of stuff thrown together as if satisfying the demands of a roughly organized and not very intelligent committee. So you have the old characters to satisfy those people who were there first time round more than anything else. Then to counteract that, you have some plucky young characters who do a kind of Scooby-Doo thing, and we make sure they're racially balanced. It's a good thing. I'm not criticizing that. And there's a little bit of an LGBT thing going on. And then we have some boring action. So there's one scene in which Chris Pratt is racing across rooftops, and then there's some fast and furious action. There's a Bond lair in it, and none of this stuff kind of flows.
And funnily enough,
a coherent narrative.
Yeah, funnily enough, you haven't even mentioned a single dinosaur yet. But Cara,
no, I haven't.
Yeah, Donald, let me go to Cara on it. Donald, characteristically on the fence there, I think, about his feelings around legacy characters. Is there a plot here? And are there anyhow dinosaurs to give me a bit of a fright along the way, Cara?
Well, speaking as a dinosaur nerd from a young age, yes, there is some great dinosaurs in there. And I'm very proud to say that I can pronounce Therizinosaurus, which is a fabulous feathered dinosaur that appears mid-action. And I will pick a tiny dinosaur bone with Donald there. I loved the rooftop chase. I mean, I'm a big fan of old school rooftop. And if you put a rooftop with an action person and a dinosaur chasing them, I thought that was a highlight for me.
All right. Well, let's have a listen to. I don't think there's a lot of action in the first clip that I'm going to play here. It's Laura Dern and Sam Neill. And I suppose early on in the film, when you bring old characters back together, they have to have a little chat with each other to catch up on what's been happening since they were last together.
How are you kids?
Amazing. Grown. It's shocking. They're both in college. Can you believe that?
And Mark?
It's over.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. I'm back to me and my work. You know, it's...
That's great.
It's good. It is. I'm alone at last.
Exciting times.
Yeah, I'm living the Alan Grant life. It's just...
Can be lonely.
So free.
Allie, you didn't come out all this way just to catch up now, did you?
Oh, how did he know that? That's Alan Grant, played by Sam Neill in a scene there from Jurassic World Dominion. And, of course, we also heard Laura Dern as Ellie Sattler. So is she back to look for the Therizinosaurus? Well, is that what she's back there
well
for?
Well done. She's actually back because there is giant mutated locusts that are on the loose. And if they keep moving at the rate at which they're moving, they're going to decimate the entire population's crops.
Right.
So it starts with giant locusts and then ends up with Therizinosauruses. So it goes from small to very large.
Oh, I see. Well, there's an arc of a narrative, surely, Donald. That does it not? Are we not really looking at a bit of fun here and yes, a bit of nostalgia? Is that really what we should be looking for? And do we get it?
Well, I never. Well, I didn't have fun. I mean, this sort of. I mean, I didn't have fun at all. I mean, this argument's always put forward that whenever films like this get terrible reviews, and it's getting terrible reviews, and I don't think they can quite have expected how badly it was going to go down with critics. That, I mean, oh, just let yourself go and have fun. But I didn't have fun. I was bored. I mean, there's this notion that somehow that that what you're watching is something that energizes you and plucks you up and flings you forward. But in fact, it's just deeply dreary for most of the time, because you require that kind of narrative structure and that momentum that you get from a properly written film to keep you interested, or in my case, you did. Well, what you get instead is the concept that South Park satirized so well a few decades ago was member berries. That notion where you just sort of suck up these pleasing memories of another time, and that will do in lieu of anything more imaginative or anything more carefully structured.
All right, but
for example, all the legacy characters need to do is turn up. You don't have to really do anything with them. That's all they need to do, according to this logic. And I think, unfortunately, what I'm going to say is that I think it's probably going to work. I mean, I think this is going to make an absolute fortune. I mean, the previous two, we should explain, that this is the third part of a sequel, of a second trilogy, the Jurassic World trilogy, which began 2015. And the 2015 film was, for a while, the third highest grossing film of all time. So, and the second one didn't make much less, and I think this will do the same,
right?
Because you just can flog this concept, particularly outside North America, where the first one made a billion outside North America alone. So,
all right,
whatever we say, it won't matter.
They're going to make money. Stars from you, Donald?
Yep.
Stars?
One and a half.
Maybe all for the Therizinosaurus. I'm delighted with that word this evening. And what are you saying, Cara? Is there a nod? Did you get? I think you're more of a dinosaur fan, possibly here.
I am, and I have a lot of fondness. When I 1993, the first film, I was 14, and I made my radio debut. I was asked on East Coast Radio, Imrie, as the local dinosaur expert, to review the film for its authenticity. So I have fondness, and I did like to see the original characters back. There is a lot of mistakes in this film. There's a lot of flaws. But I'm off the camp of it's enjoyable. It could have been a lot better. There could have been a lot more to it. But it's a romp. And really, dinosaurs running over mountains and over rooftops. I mean, there's not a huge amount you can get. Look, I enjoyed it. It's a bit of a laugh. Three stars. If you don't like dinosaurs or the legacy characters, you won't get much from it. But anyone else will have a bit of fun.
All right. That's 1.5 and 3 respectively there for Jurassic World Dominion. Let us move on to Swan Song. This is our second film this evening. Kay actually spoke to the writer and director, Todd Stevens, earlier this week. His feature, Swan Song, on one level, is about a deep bond between a woman and her hairdresser, a bond that can transcend death in this case. But really, as retired stylist Pat Petzenberger sets out to do one last job, the hair of a spiky and now deceased client, he encounters the memories of his former life in all its sadness and all its glory. Donald, before we get into talking about the film itself, just Udo Kier, who plays the hairdresser in this case, if you could put his career in perspective, because it's very interesting, you kind of view, I think, his performance here through that prism.
You do. It's a fascinating career. I mean, he probably first emerged into the popular consciousness in the Andy Warhol horror films that Warhol didn't direct them, but it was Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein and Blood for Dracula, do I have that right, in the mid-1970s. And so he had that sinister persona even then. But I mean, was one of those actors who, at that period, he had that youthful, sinister look. Mm. And then about 5 or 10 years later, he began to look like he does now, and has looked that same way ever since. And he's been a reliable character actor, generally bringing a kind of gentle menace to a lot of the world's greatest directors. He was in a lot of René Werner Fassbinder's films. He worked for Dario Argento, and most recently he's worked a great deal for Lars von Trier. So that's a fairly serious and occasionally grim lineup of directors there. And he is always excellent. He's always the best thing in any scene that he's been in. And it's about time somebody find a way to slightly subvert that persona, which they do here, and that creates a character who is a warm character, who is a decent character, but is nonetheless given that edge by what we know about Ulu Kier's previous performances and how he always presents himself on screen.
Well, let's have a listen to a clip which I think gives a sense of that, because he's in a care home at this stage, the character, who's based on a real-life person. We might come back to that in a second. But here's an early scene when a lawyer for a former client of Pat's, this is a woman called Rita Parker Sloan, the lawyer comes to the care home to ask Pat to do her hair. The lawyer, Mr. Shanrock here, played by Tom Bloom, and Udo Kier as the aforementioned Pat, giving his answer to the lawyer's request.
You made Rita Parker Sloan the most glamorous woman in town.
She should have updated her will.
I entered her final revisions personally a week before she died.
Rita left me as a client, you remember?
I also remember you were close friends, dear friends.
I haven't pulled hair in years.
Naturally, the will makes a provision for services rendered. Rita wants to make things right.
I'm retired.
Let bygones be bygones, Patrick. It's not healthy to hold a grudge. You would deny a great woman her dying wish?
Show the gentleman the door. Mr. Shanrock, bury her with bad hair.
Now there's a way to get back at somebody. Bury her with bad hair, his closing line there, Udo Kier, in a scene from Swan Song. And Cara, as Donald was saying to us there, you have both those sides very much in Udo Kier in this film. You get that nasty, vicious kind of ability to give the killer line, but also a wonderful softness and ability to bring us down memory lane, and a very specific type of Ohio that he brings us to.
He does. I mean, he's got this great kindness for there's a fellow patient in the nursing home who he cares for her hair so lovingly. Mm. When he does a runner from the nursing home, he basically, it's a bit like Forrest Gump. He begins the long walk to get home. It's very much quiet, sleepy, middle America, where the like of Pat doesn't really fit in anymore. He goes into almost like an old truck stop to get cigarettes and asks for cigarettes that haven't been around in donkey's years. And bit by bit, he has to collect these different items, particular hair products that he used in his heyday. And all these things, they don't exist anymore. But as he walks through the journey to find these things, it's a combination of he meets old friends, or he might do. They're possibly ghosts or hallucinations. But he also has encounters with, for example, he goes into a charity shop to buy an outfit and he meets a woman, and he had shown her kindness years later and she still remembers it to this day. So he on one hand, he absolutely bite the head off you with his tongue and then show this gentle, loving side in very, very subtle ways.
Yeah, and I mean, for another example that struck me, Donald, was a scene where he meets a former client. He remembers exactly the hairstyle that he gave her. He remembers the name of her child. He remembers things about her, you know, from 20, 30 years ago. He clearly, and this is based on, as I said, on a real life character, he clearly had a wonderful relationship with his clients.
Well, he did, yes. And it gets at, I mean, it's, I think it's important that to the tone of the film, what the film is getting at, that it's not set in Los Angeles, it's not set in New York, it's not set in Portland, that it is set in this town in Ohio, this ordinary town in Ohio, which presses home that, you know, that there were gay communities in times that were less tolerant of gay people 20, 30, 40 years ago, even in places like Ohio. And it's worth remembering that when we often tend to identify those years with the communities in San Francisco and Los Angeles or wherever. It's fascinating. I mean, it's a slightly rough edged film, soft hearted, sometimes sentimental, but I'm fascinated with the structure. I mean, we're dealing with a sort of a mock heroic odyssey here, in a sense. Like Leopold Bloom, he's making his journey across this city in just one day, but perhaps a less fecund city than Dublin, but he's making his way across it in just one day. And commissioned, we should point out, to make up nobody else other than a recently dead Linda Evans, who's back, and gets this. It's a strange thing to say about when assessing the actors in this film, that the person who looks the most fabulous in the whole film is the person who was dead. Now, we should say that this is in a kind of slightly a fantasy scene, I assume,
yes,
where Linda pops up to play the character and addresses the protagonist, and they make a sort of peace after all these years. But she looks fantastic. I mean, she looks every bit as good as she did in Dynasty 30, 40 years ago. And it's great to see her back. It's also about, which is interesting, about the way in which being gay has changed in the past 20, 30, 40 years. And the key scene forwarding that discussion is when he and an old pal observe two gay dads, and they're largely approving, and you know, there's a sense that they wish that they could have had that degree of freedom whenever they were young. But they're also a bit divided by it. They also feel it's maybe something has been lost as well. I think Udo says something to the effect of, "I just wouldn't know how to be gay anymore," he says. And there's a sense of regret there in that statement. So that's in there as well. So for what is quite a sort of simple film, I say quite a plain film in many ways, there's a great deal in it.
Yeah, let's listen to another clip which gives us a sense of, because there's a kind of a mystery going on here and all sorts of past difficulties between various characters. Here he is in that scene that you mentioned earlier on, Cara. He's in a local shop and he's looking for more cigarettes. And I don't mean more is a brand name of a kind of cigarella,
yes,
type of thing, wasn't it? Yeah. And here he is looking for those. And he's also looking for a very specific type of makeup as well, as we'll hear.
You made Rita Parker Sloan the most glamorous woman in town.
Oh, that's the wrong one. Here's this one, is the one I was looking for.
Pack of Moors.
Moors? For real? Folks don't ask for these nowadays. Your wife still smokes Moors?
She adores them. Not beauty supply. Still on Tiffin Avenue?
No clue, dude.
There's a fabulous salon done by the waterfront, Dee Dee Dale's place.
She's still alive?
Dee Dee has everything.
Thank you, miss, but my client demand high quality beauty products, like Vivante.
They still make Vivante?
523.
For one pack?
Charge it instead.
You cash checks?
Personal?
Government. I know what you're thinking. How can someone so flawless possibly be on Social Security?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That scene there from Swan Song, Udo Kier, as the gay man running or going across the city, basically looking for that particular type of makeup, Vivante or Vivanti, depending on where you're from. But Cara, how much of a miss, because it is quite, even from his delivery there, you hear the speed of it. It's quite a slow moving pace in this film. Is there enough tension about, because there are certain aspects of the past that kind of are only unfolded where the information is drip fed to us. Does it hold the attention?
It does. I think just because we're so involved in him, we want to know what this is about. There's, when the story starts talking about his husband or his partner, I mean, it just wants to know what happened next. Where is he? Why is he not in the home with him? Why is he not visiting him? And even that story is unraveled just bit by bit. So there's certainly enough there to just draw you in. And you just really want to know and hope that, you know, that there's a happy story in the middle of all this somewhere.
Yeah, but there'll be a few tears, I think, along the way. Overall, and stars from you, Cara?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. It's just Udo's performance is just stunning, and I loved that idea of the loss of cultural gay spaces and the trying to find that kind of that. I'm going to jump straight to a drum roll because it's a dramatic moment. I'm going for a full five here.
A full five.
I feel like it should be sashayed as I say it to fit the tone of the film.
A five covered in Vivante. What are you saying, Donald?
Well, quickly add that Dara and I gave Udo Kier Best Actor at the Dublin International Film Festival earlier on this year, and he appeared on video and was absolutely charming and seemed as delighted as if he'd won an Oscar. So that, so I have no hesitation in giving him 4.5 for Swan Song.
4.5 for Swan Song. On to our final movie then tonight from Lucile Hadzihalilović, a French writer and director of Bosnian descent. Earwig is the title of her first English language film, an unsettling drama described by one reviewer as a twisty body horror noir. Once again, if you have a phobia about dentists, and I went looking it up today, I was hoping there'd be a great word for it, but it's only dentophobe, which is very boring, I'm afraid.
Isn't that being frightened of teeth?
Yeah, and dental surgery. It's been frightened of everything to do with dentists, seemingly. There you go. Anyway, let us... Give us a sense of the kind of body horror that's involved here, because it really sounds like a David Cronenberg idea, doesn't it? I'm asking you that, Donald.
There is something of that, yes. Though I think to overstress that would be to deny the very original voice that Hadzihalilović has. She is often unfairly, and I'm doing it now, which is a little unfair of me, she's often unfairly introduced as the longtime wife of Gaspar Noé, a famous, one might say notorious, Argentinian-French director who excelled this year at with a great film of his own on aging. But in fact, her look is very much her own. It's a sick, slightly fetid, tea-stained world that she creates here, even more so than in her previous two films, Innocence and Evolution. It's a very singular world. We should also note that, I mean, a lot of that comes from a novel by Brian Catling, a fascinating author, who wrote the Vore trilogy, who writes in a school of surrealism that is nonetheless touched with a kind of terrible logic. So yes, essentially the story is her in this house initially with this man who's taking care of her, who's played by Paul Hilton. Mia is in this house. The thing with the teeth is fascinating. My reading of it is that he's freezing her saliva and reintroducing the frozen saliva into her mouth as teeth. Meanwhile, he's communicating with a sinister voice at the end of a phone, and they're talking about introducing her out into the wider world at some point, which initially doesn't go terribly well. This characteristically strange scene where she ends up neck deep in a pond while Romola Garai looks on from a bridge. Mostly now, when you're dealing with essentially the work of surrealism, there's always a temptation to try and figure it out. I mean, you get this obviously with David Lynch, you get this with Buñuel, whatever. And I think that's always a mistake. I mean, it's not a crossword puzzle, and there's no solution. Yeah. But I do think that there are connections you can make. I mean, I saw an awful lot of The Wasteland in it, of T.S. Eliot, in the sense there's an awful lot of stuff that is relating this back to the aftermath of the First World War. And there's one scene in the bar where Albert, the fellow who's taking care of her, meets someone who says we knew each other perhaps from the war.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of acronym, a lot of that Middle European stuff. Yeah.
Let's have a listen to a little section from the trailer, in fact, which gives an idea of that creepiness in the setup, and also that phone call that you were talking about, Donald, that this call from a master.
Everything is well, sir. She sleeps soundly. Her appetite is good.
And the teeth.
All is as it should be.
You must prepare the girl to leave. Or bring her to us.
Yeah, certainly a creepy type of feel to that clip from the trailer to Earwig. Cara, Donald saying that there are connections to be found here. could you work anything out here? Did you try to work anything out, or did you let it wash over you in a way that was satisfying or unsatisfying, as the case may be?
I'll be entirely honest. I have a terrible fear of dentists.
You're a dentophobe.
I'm a dentophobe. The thought of a contraption like that coming near my mouth made me feel sick from the start. And I have a real problem. This sounds really weird, but I can't stand looking at slobber. So I was unnerved from the start, and I found it very hard to get over that. So in a sense, I mean, it's very chilling. So it was effective. It certainly got to me. But it's, I don't know what the right word is for it. I was very traumatised. I just found it very hard.
So you clearly were upset by the whole experience. But as a cinematic event, or as a cinematic experience, how does it go in terms of stars from you first, Cara?
I'm going to go for the 3 on a sort of a technical level. It looks incredible, even it's very dark and kind of drab, but there's a fabulous use of light and prism effects through glass. So we see a lot of really interesting, there's even a moment where a tooth sparkles, and for somebody who's got a fear of kind of teethy things, I was quite transfixed by that moment. Right. So 3 stars, but
solid,
it just,
a solid
but,
3.
But
okay.
It wasn't for me.
All right. What are you saying, Donald, overall?
It was terrific. I would happily give it 4.5. Tremendous music, which you have mentioned. Music is not the correct word. The sound design, the kind of glitchy sound design. I thought it was terrific. 4.5. I'm sure it'll make more money than Jurassic World Dominion.
All right. We'll see. Earwig and Swan Song, the second 2 films we were speaking about, they will be available in selected cinemas from tomorrow, including the IFI. And Jurassic World Dominion, not surprisingly, goes on general release from tomorrow. My thanks to Donald Clark and Cara O'Doherty for those reviews this evening.